On the county land use plan, just to set the table here in case you haven't been following this, the Laramie County Commission on Tuesday at 3:30 scheduled to come up with a new land use plan that would regulate what people can do in the county, how they do it, and that sort of thing. At 11:05, we had Julie Formby on. She's a concerned citizen who has some concerns, and she's a citizen, so she's a concerned citizen. But anyway, she did have some concerns. And on this segment, I have Justin Arnold. He's the county planner. Justin, where would you like to start?
Well, good morning, Doug. It's good to be with you again. So I did kind of have an update as it relates to the regulations to provide to you today. Obviously wanted to address some of the concerns brought up by your previous guest, but I know you had mentioned earlier, just wanted to reiterate that we are going before the Laramie County Board of Commissioners for a final decision on Tuesday.
3:30.
That's at 3:30 up on third floor of the old courthouse. Obviously want people to come and provide their two cents, but we'll kind of get into what we've done over the past several months to kind of get that 2 cents and make sure that we've incorporated a lot of those suggestions that we've got from the public into the regulation through public notice. So I think I'll kind of intertwine what I was going to present and then address some of the concerns that were brought up. First and foremost, Ms. Formby was absolutely correct in that the last two times we've had a board hearing on this, we have postponed it. The first time being is that there was a final review completed by the county engineer, and he had a flow chart contained within the regulations that needed a correction to it. Out of the interest of transparency and things like that, knowing that we've been going through this process for 2.5 years now, putting it back 2 weeks when we made any changes, we did provide in a memo just some of the reference type language, minor changes that were made. But that was the reasoning behind the first postponement. The second time that we postponed it was actually tied and related to the cell tower concerns that were brought up by Ms. Formby in the prior discussion. I want to note that what the proposal to incorporate into that regulation was strictly referencing federal code that says that you absolutely cannot take into consideration microfrequency waves when approving or denying a cell tower if you're a local jurisdiction.
So your hands are tied there.
Our hands are tied. That is codified. That's federal law. So what we did after that hearing, the county attorney, we had some discussions, and she was talking about that appeals thing. So the appeals that were incorporated in were actually, and it currently isn't in the regulation, if the Board of County Commissioners or the Planning Commission deny something, there is no appeal to them. You appeal to the district court. Mm-hmm. And when you have to go to court, those are sometimes cumbersome costs and things along those lines that a lot of private citizens or small developers can't pay for. So what we said was, okay, let's say the board denies an application. What it allows for the applicant to do, and it's specifically the applicant who can appeal it, because a lot of the times when you're in a public hearing setting, some things get brought up or something gets brought up that you haven't thought about before, or you don't have the documentation there to alleviate the concerns brought up through the public hearing, and say the Board of County Commissioners denies this. What it allows people to do is it gives them 7 business days to write a reconsideration request to the county clerk with the additional information that the commissioners might have requested at that hearing, or something that they might not have been able to address there, and they provide that information. It allows the county commissioners to look at that proposal and say, okay, we've got some more information. We're going to give you the ability for us to rehear it. So what that does is allow them to forego having to pay those court costs if they can justify something that wasn't addressed in a public hearing. So it was just an additional tool for applicants without making an appeal through the court process more cumbersome for them. So that was the idea behind that. But again, the cell tower stuff was strictly referencing federal code. I also want to address the public notice, because statute does require 45-day public notice in the paper of record, which I tend to agree. Unfortunately, a lot of people don't read the legal ads anymore.
That's kind of outdated.
It is outdated. And as a matter of fact, we moved from right now, she mentioned that people get notified, their adjacent neighbors get notified if there's a zone change or something along those lines. We do certified mailers to those directly adjacent neighbors currently, but that's $5 and change. A lot of people don't go get their certified mailers, so they don't ever get that letter.
They see a mailer and they think junk mail.
They think it's where they see a certified mail and they don't go to the post office and pick it up. So we said, how can we make it less cost more cost effective for the applicant and provide information to more people? We said, we're going to go out to 500 feet in the rural areas, 200 feet, 250 feet in the urbanized areas, and we're going to send those first class mail because people open those. Mm-hmm. But we expanded that buffer zone so mm-hmm. more people get the notice. So that's kind of why we did that. I would note that at the front end of this, when we started these conversations back in November, and I'll note that we started with 6,000 emails. So if you pulled a building permit or a zoning permit or anything along those lines post-2008, you received an email with this information saying that we were doing this. We obviously put it out in November. We were doing weekly meetings at the Planning and Development Office, which were available virtually so that people can come in. I always have realtors and developers and things along those lines coming in. As a matter of fact, I had a couple realtors from RE/MAX who were concerned about the regulations come in a couple days ago, had a discussion just like everybody else that I've visited with and had an in-depth conversation about what was there and what we're doing. They walked away understanding what we're doing and relatively happy with it.
And that's something I brought up with Julian. I'll bring it up with you. One of the problems with this, it's very complicated stuff. It's not something you can sit down and read 15 minutes and say, I got it.
Yeah.
It's complicated. It's intricate. It's detailed. And it's not easy to grasp all this, is it?
Yeah. Well, and there was some other things. You can't get around some of the legalese type language you get in some of these regulations because a lot of it's boilerplate and, you know, reference from state statute. But I noted a couple interviews ago, and I think the last interview that we did, that Michael Surface is the one who wrote this. And, you know, I love our county attorney. I love our county engineer. But what we can all agree upon, and I can probably agree with Ms. Formby on this front, in that we don't want engineers nor attorneys writing our county regulations.
Because nobody will know what it means.
Good, better, except, never, except that's
for,
the case.
Except for attorneys and engineers.
So again, I kind of leaned on that pretty heavily in that I wanted planners and the local community citizens, you know, me having lived here for the last 41 years, to write this regulation that's more understandable. So I believe that, you know, yeah, it takes a little while to absorb it. I still learn, you know, new things from the existing regulations from time to time, even though I've been enforcing them for the last 15 years.
But it's also helpful to look yourself because rumors get around and
100%
things get said that may not be accurate.
Absolutely. And that's kind of why I just try to come to all these type of events and make sure that I've provided my 2 cents. I want to note that in addition to those 6,000 emails, I've done 5 radio interviews, social media interviews. We've held 2 presentations out at Archer where we probably had 500 people. When someone says that I've talked to, you know, less than 1% of the people, I can tell you I've probably talked to about 1,000 in person. And we're looking at a constituency of about 2,000. You had the emails on there, the social media, the radio, obviously the public notice. And I even went to some of the ones that I wasn't even invited to because, unfortunately, I knew that if the information that was disseminated at those places were to, you know, get more widespread, that I would be having to backtrack even more. So I was showing up at the ones just so to let people know that there is the other side of that coin. There is information out there. Don't believe me. Go read it for yourself. And then, you know, come to your own conclusion. So that was kind of the whole process.
Well, what sort of reception did you get? Were people friendly or were they hostile?
I think when I went to the one, there were about 160 people there. And as soon as everybody figured out who I was, you know, there were some choice comments made to me. There, you know, there weren't very many people that were too receptive of me. And I knew that was the case. But what I said was, hey, here's the information. I brought pamphlets saying you don't have to believe me right now. Do your own research.
Right.
And then I let the process, I got a couple minutes, which I was grateful for, to be able to at least provide my 2 cents. But yeah, there was a lot of animosity towards me. But by the time I left, there was still some people that hadn't, you know, but they were at least open-minded.
Right.
And I can tell you that we went through all these processes and we went from 300 people in a room to, I think it speaks to the project itself that the last public hearing, we had one, you know, dissident public comment on the whole matter. So I think that speaks a lot to what our staff has done as far as community outreach, the impact, the information we've got from the commissioners to kind of facilitate a process the way it's supposed to be done.
Speaking of public comment, you brought up something, and I think this is when we were chatting before going on air, I hope. Julie Formby mentioned that I think out of 247 comments or something like that, I could have the wrong number. But she said there were only four positive comments. The others were overwhelmingly against that. But you had something, you told me something about that.
Yeah, you know, certainly. This all started back in November when, you know, the letter went out and that bad information got out. Community connections, you know, obviously you post some stuff on there that makes, you know, the governmental jurisdiction, you know, sound like they're doing something nefarious and people kind of come out of the woodwork. Well, that all went out. I put out the public comment form on our website. And there's a pretty, you can tell on the bell curve. We got a lot of comments, and everything that was substantive, that provided an actual suggestion that would work and was feasible to incorporate into the regulation, we looked at them seriously. Me being called a communist or, you know, some other thing that wasn't very friendly to the department or the regulation that was unsubstantive, we got a lot of those. But what I can say is when the information initially went out, when the public outcry started, it was high. And I think there's a few more than that now. So at the front end, yeah, as soon as I was able to start speaking to the community, having these open houses, going to these presentations, going to these meetings, it fell off. The bell curve dropped. So you can know it if you look at the public comment form, which is in the staff report package that everyone's able to see that will be presented on Tuesday. You can see exactly when the dates, or you can reference that and see when the dates were, because they were all on the front end.
Speaking of being a communist, Julie's big problems with this were twofold. She says it's an infringement on public, an infringement on personal freedom, and it's overly... it micromanages people too much, and again, infringes on freedom, basically.
Yeah.
How would you respond to that?
And I can say it in one sentence. This is very much less regulatory than the existing document that I've enforced 20 years. I'm not going to sit here and lie to someone. If I'm going to get, you know, eventually it would come out of the wash if I was sitting here giving bad information out at this point in time. But I can sit here and say that that just isn't the case. We follow state statute. As a matter of fact, Laramie counties, I would remind people, are an extension of state government.
Right.
Counties follow what legislature decides, and that ties all back to annexation. I'll agree with Julie, because that was some bad information given out prior to that the county has anything to do with annexations. The only time the county has anything to do with annexations is if we actually own a parcel that's being annexed.
Right.
And we can protest just like any other residents in the county. Beyond that, it's nothing. I want to talk about zoning real quick, because it was alluded to that when you call an urbanized district...
I was just going to ask about that.
When you call an urbanized district urban, then it opens up the door for the city to say, hey, we can come in and annex that. That's just not the case. We have an urbanized area. We have the South Cheyenne Water and Sewer District. That's a town the size of Cody, 10,000 people that we have to regulate. And it is, you know, more in tune with Cheyenne and things like that. So we have urbanized areas.
It's a more populated area.
Yeah, smaller lot sizes than the rural areas, so on and so forth. A common misconception on that front as well. People were and are currently zoned agricultural, residential, agricultural in that zone district, and they think that that pertains to their tax purposes. Oh, I can be taxed as agricultural. No, that's not the case. It's a zone district. Zoning has nothing to do with tax structures or anything like that.
Looks like we have a caller here. Let's put this person on the air. If they'll bear with me for just a minute while I punch a couple of buttons. And good afternoon. You're on the air.
Thank you. Steve Johnson, House Representative, District 8. And I would just like to say that this commerce is regulated by the legislature and not by the counties. So any new license required by the county is going counter to the state statutes. I'd also like to say that if you're going to require a home-based license and it is going to be free, write that in the statute. And those are my comments.
Okay. Well, thanks for the call, Representative. Justin, any comment?
I certainly appreciate that, Representative Johnson. you're absolutely right. Legislature passes those laws. Legislature also passes Title 18, which allows counties to draft zoning regulations that work for their community. So mm-hmm. that's a legislative tool that's given to the counties, which we enforce. The current land use regulations require a home occupation permit, again, free of charge. And, you know, the mention that the fees would go up or anything like that, that's hearsay. That, you know, there's nothing that is factual about that. It's just a hypothetical, right? But right now, the home occupations have a lot of restrictions. You can't do an automotive shop in your shop. You can't do a nail salon. You can't do a tattoo parlor, things like that. And that didn't really make sense to me, because as long as you're in the house or as long as you're within an accessory structure, and I'll note that in the land use zone district, which is going to be the majority of Laramie County, you can also have outdoor storage in some instances. Mm-hmm. Might need some screening or something along those lines. But all we're doing with the home occupation permit is letting people know what the guidelines are for that, because a lot of the times if you're in a home occupation, you're in a neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
All we're saying is that, yeah, you need to just know that we want to keep the character of the neighborhood in place, but we aren't prohibiting you from applying to go further beyond that. If you want to do the landscaping companies, if you want to open a business up to the public and things like that, we've incorporated instruments into the regulation which allow you to apply for anything, pretty much anything, anywhere. But you have to, if it's intensive enough, you go before the governing bodies where they can approve it with conditions or deny it if it's not a feasible use in that specific area. But again, Representative Johnson's right. There's other requirements as it relates to Department of Revenue, Secretary of State, for these small businesses that are going on. I'll say that there's a lot of people waiting for these regulations to take effect, because I would say that there's probably 300 to 400 small businesses operating right now that may be home occupations, maybe a little bit more than a home occupation, that are technically operating illegal based off of the current regulations. So what I said was, I don't have the bandwidth to go back and try to re-regulate all these people. I said, let's go ahead, and I talked to the commissioners on this, mm-hmm. let's go ahead and effectively grandfather those businesses with the caveat that if you constitute a nuisance, which is, again, statutory, passed by legislature, those are nuisance statutes, and we follow those. If you constitute a nuisance, we're going to treat you the same as we would any other resident in Laramie County. Maybe you got to screen some of your materials. You got a lot of construction materials blown off site. Hey, let's go ahead and keep those contained properly. So we've met in the middle with the existing businesses, allowing the neighbors a tool if it gets out of hand. And then, obviously, we'll move forward with the less restrictive regulations moving forward.
And by the way, we are taking calls 632-6500. I know this is a topic people care about a lot. Every time I've had you on, I've gotten multiple calls. When Julie Formby was on, we got a couple calls. But again, you're mostly here just to explain this. And I want to reiterate for people who are just joining us, we're talking about the county land use plan. Oh, boy, we're almost out of time. Check the clock. We're running short here.
Can we go into RVs real quick?
Go into RVs real
okay.
quick.
I tend to agree. RVs, historically, living in an RV has kind of been taboo. And you're absolutely right. Under the current regulations, it says that you can't live in an RV unless you're constructing a home. I've talked to the commissioners. I talk to the commissioners every month through this whole process to get their feedback. And they're very commonsensical people. And they usually advise me to move forward with those common sense type regulations. I said, what if they have a deed to the property and we're only specifically talking about permanent RV living? If you're going to stay with your in-laws or your in-laws are coming to stay with you, nobody's going to see anything. When your neighbors start noticing that someone's been living there for 6-8 months, we might get a call and we might inquire about it.
Which brings up an important point. You don't go looking for this. You act on complaints. Is that right?
Absolutely. And I'll also note that we have accessory living quarters right now. So if you do have a family member that wants to come live on your property for a period of time, all we required, and again, I talked to the commissioners, you have to have a viable septic. So if you have a primary residence, somebody wants to live in an RV, you come, you get an application as an accessory living quarter. Your family can live there For 3 years at a time with 3 year renewals. And that can be a manufactured home set, a tiny home, or an RV. So you can live in an RV. We just want to make sure you're tied into the septic. Or if you have a deed to the property, you want to start saving up your nest egg, you have 5 acres there, you can't afford a house right now, live in your RV, install a septic. You won't lose your equity in the septic. If you have to sell the property for some reason, you can't buy or you can't build. And then live there, and you'll get an address. We have a $75 fee because we'll give you an address so you can live in your RV on your property.
Okay, we're almost out of time. We do have another call. Oh, that's my next guest. Mike, hang on the line here. We'll get you on in a couple minutes.
Can I say just real quick, because we are transparent, and I want to note that we are having an open house strictly related to building code. Now, we had a building code one back in November, and it kind of got hijacked with the land use regulations stuff. So I want to just reiterate, this is specifically to building code. That will be on August 20th from 5 to 7 p.m., where they'll go over tiny homes, which we've adopted those regulations or those codes for the International Residential Code, the accessory dwelling units, which are you can put more than one house if you meet certain criteria, the pole barn construction guide. We have pre-engineered plans for people if they want to go build a pole barn and not pay for an engineer, our online permitting portal, and we want to get feedback related to code and our processes. So
okay.
Just note that.
We're down to about 2 minutes left. I think Mike was just calling for the next segment, but let's find out. Mike, did you have a comment on this, or are you just calling in early?
Calling in early.
Okay. Okay, well, go ahead there, Justin. Looks like we're almost out of time. You have 2 minutes left.
All right. Let's see. I want to say that, and I want to reiterate this because this was kind of the thing that got out there. They were saying that it was $750 per day fine, right?
Right.
In what the regulations, which are directly referenced to statute, again, I'll say we're an arm of the state legislature. The state legislature passed the law that says up to $750 per day. We simply follow it. So, I've never seen anybody, even habitual offenders, good, bad, or indifferent. They might be in court 3 or 4 times, and it is a cumbersome process. We have to send them a certified mailer saying, here's your violation. Then we have to send all that information to the county attorney, sheriff's office, for issuance of a citation. It's a must appear in court. But again, I've never seen a judge, you know, even for someone who's been in violation for 6 months, maybe it's $100, couple hundred dollars. So, you know, I think it's just a little bit off base. I also want to say, and this is very important, related to the home occupations, I'm not aware of one instance in my entire 15 years at Laramie County where we've went into a home to verify that you're using a certain amount of your floor space as your home occupation. We're working in good faith with you. You're certifying that you know the requirements, and I can say that just doesn't happen.
You don't go into people's homes.
I haven't been into anybody's house unless invited, and they called and invited me.
Okay, so. Well, that's about going to wrap it up for this segment. I hope we got some good information out there with the two segments we did today on the county land use plan. Again, commissioners taking it up Tuesday afternoon at 3:30. If you live in a rural part of Laramie County, this is a pretty big deal. So you might want to pay close attention, maybe even go to the meeting if you have time. So, Justin, I'd like to thank you for stopping by once again. Appreciate it.
Thanks, sir.
Take care. AM 650 KGAB, Cheyenne Orchard Valley.